Chapter 21. Naomi. "Bist bien, Knuckles?" Carl asked. The thin, slap-together galley was too big for so small a crew. Bad design, waste of space. It wasn't worn, it was cheap. She looked at him from behind the veil of her hair and smiled. "Fine, things being," she said, making a joke. "Como ça?" Carl shrugged with his hands. His hair had gotten gray over the years, and the stubble of his beard. It had been as black as the space between the stars once. He looked at her eyes, and she didn't flinch. "Something to say, me?" "No secrets between us now," she replied, and he laughed. She smiled back, the prisoner flirting with the turnkey, hoping a kind thought in his head would help her later. Maybe it would. The thing that frightened her most was how well she knew how to play it. From the moment she'd come back to consciousness, she talked when people talked to her, laughed when someone told a joke. She acted like her abduction was just one of those things that happens, like using someone's tools without asking first. She pretended to sleep, ate as much as she could past the tightness in her gut, and they all treated her like she was the girl she'd been, like they could all ignore the years and the differences, fold her back in as though she'd never gone away, as if she'd never been anyone else. Hiding her fear and her outrage slipped back on so easily, as if she'd never stopped. It made her wonder whether perhaps she hadn't. "So I was one," he said. "Helped with Filipito? Took care?" "Good." "No," Carl said. "Before that. Sometimes he was with me." Naomi smiled. She'd been trying not to remember those desperate days after she'd told Marco she was leaving. The days after he'd taken Philip. To keep the boy safe, he'd said. Until she got her emotions under control, he'd said. A knot filled her throat, but she smiled past it. "Those days you had him?"
"Immer no, but sometimes. Hijo moved, yeah? Night here, two nights there."
Her baby passed around among the people she knew. The manipulation of it was brilliant. Marco using his child as a marker of how much trust he placed in them, and at the same time, painting her as the crazed one, the dangerous one. Making sure the story in their community was about how solid he was, and how close to cracked she'd come. She had the sudden powerful memory of Carl looking in from the kitchen while she broke down in his wife's arms. Suja, her name had been. What must her tears and profanity have looked like to him then? "Kept it quiet," Naomi said, "and I wouldn't have known. So why say it here?" Carl's hands shrugged again. "New day, new start. Looking to scrape off some old rust." She tried to read from his face whether that was true, or if this was just another little cruelty in a form she couldn't call out without looking like the crazy one. If it had been back on the Rossi, she would have known. But here, now, the balance between fear and anger and trying to control herself swamped little things like truth. It was the beauty of the way Marco had set her against herself. Tell her she was broken as a way to break her. And here they were, a decade and a half past, and it still worked. Then, for a moment, Amos was there, stronger in her memory than the surrounding ship. "It don't matter what's inside, boss. They only care what you do." She didn't know if it was a memory or just her mind reaching for a place of certainty in an environment where nothing could be relied upon. "If Amos has become my personal touchstone for wisdom, I'm fucked," she thought, and laughed. Carl ventured a smile. "Thank you for telling it straight," Naomi said. "New start. Scrape off the rust.
And if I ever get the chance to leave you behind in a fire, Carl, then good God you will burn," she thought.
A chime sounded that the acceleration warning came on. She hadn't noticed when the ship had made its flip. Might have been when she was asleep, or slowly over the course of hours so that the rotation was subliminal. It didn't matter. She was cargo here. It didn't matter what she knew.
"Strap in, yeah?" Carl said.
"On my way," she said, launching herself gently to the ceiling, and then back to the deck at the crash couch between Sin and Wings. It had turned out Wings's real name was Alex, But that space was taken in her mind, so he was wings forever to her. He smiled to her, and she smiled back as she strapped herself in against the gel. The warning went from an amber glow to a 10 count in soft amber numbers, and at 0 the couch lurched up against her, folding her a few centimeters in. The deceleration burn had started. When it stopped, they'd be where Marco was. After the passageway linked the airlocks, she'd thought there would be some kind of farewell. Hugs and lies and all the things people did at the parting after a long journey. When it didn't happen, she understood that it had only been a long journey for her. The flight from Ceres to the empty space sunward of Mars and the Hungaria asteroids was like going from the couch to the head for them. Philip emerged from the ops deck, looking sharp and hard. No, that wasn't true. Looking like a boy trying to look sharp and hard. "Check her for weapons," Philip said, biting at the words. Sin looked from Philip to Naomi and back.
"Verdad? Knuckles been packing, she'd been for a long time. Doesn't seem..."
"No prisoners on the Pella without a check," Philip said, pulling a flechette gun from his pocket, and not pointing it at her in particular.
"Way it is, yeah?"
Sin shrugged and turned to her.
"Way it is."
Philip looked at her, his lips pressed thin, his fingers too aware of the trigger on his gun. He should have looked threatening, but he mostly looked scared and angry. Sending a son on a kidnap job was the sort of thing Marco would do. It wasn't that it was cruel, though it was cruel. It wasn't that it would corrode any relationship that they might have had, though it did that too. It was only that it would work. Even putting Philip on Ceres looked like a manipulation now. "Here is your son, where you left him. Come into the mousetrap and take him back." And she'd done it. She didn't know if she was more disappointed in Philip or herself. They were two very different kinds of disappointment, and the one pointed at her had more poison in it. She could forgive Philip anything. He was a boy, and living with Marco in his head. Forgiving herself was going to be harder, and she didn't have much practice. When the outer airlock cycled, she suffered a wave of disorientation. The passage was the usual design of inflated mylar and titanium ribs. There was nothing about it that looked strange. It wasn't until they'd nearly reached the other side that she recognized the smell of it, tangy and deep and probably carcinogenic, the outgassing of volatile organics from the cloth.
"This is new," she said.
"We don't talk about it," Philip said. "We don't talk about much, do we?" she snapped, and he looked back at her, surprised by the bite in her voice. "You think you know what I am," she thought, "but all you've got is stories." The airlock of the other ship was weirdly familiar. The curve was like the airlock on the Rossi, and the design of the latch. Martian design, and more than that, Martian Navy. Marco had come into a military ship. Inside, soldiers waited. Unlike the ragged group on Ceres, they wore a rough kind of uniform, gray jumpsuits with a split circle on their arms and breasts. Against the clean design of the ship's corridor, they looked like bad costumes in a play with good set design. The guns were real, though, and she didn't doubt they'd use them. The bridge looked like the Rosinante's younger brother. After the cheap, barely enough aesthetic of the Chetsmuka, military-grade crash couches and terminal displays looked solid and reassuring, and there, in the center of it all, like he'd posed himself, floated Marco. He wore something like a military uniform, but without any insignia. He was beautiful as a statue. Even now, she had to give him that. She could still remember when those lips and the softness in those eyes had made her feel safe. Lifetimes ago, that was. Now he smiled, and a strange relief spread through her. She was with him again, and unquestionably, in his power. Her nightmare had come true, so at least she didn't have to dread it anymore. "I've brought her, sir," Philip said, all his consonants sharp enough to cut with. "Mission accomplished."
"I never had a doubt," Marco said.
In person, his voice had a richness that recorded messages lost. Good work, mijo. Philip gave a little salute and spun to leave. Ah, Marco said, pulling the boy up short. Don't be rude, Philip. Kiss your mother before you go.
You don't have to do that, Naomi said, but eyes blank and empty. Philip floated over and pecked her cheek with dry lips before returning to the lift.
The guards went with him, except for two that took up stations behind her.
It's been a long time, Marco said.
You look good.
The years have been kind to you.
You too, she said. Sound different too. When did you stop talking like a belter?
Marco spread his hands. In order to be heard by the oppressing class, one must speak as a member of it. Not only the language, but the diction. The accusation of tyranny, however well-founded in fact, is dismissed unless it is delivered in the manner that power recognizes as powerful. That's why Fred Johnson was useful. He was already iconic of an authority that the authorities understood.
So, you've been practicing then, she said, folding her arms.
It's my job.
Marco reached up, pushed his fingertips against the upper deck, and floated down toward the control couches.
Thank you for coming.
Naomi didn't answer that. She could feel him already rewriting the past, treating her like she'd chosen to join him, like she was responsible for being here. Instead, she nodded toward the ops deck.
Nice ride. Where'd you get it?
Friends in high places, Marco said, and then chuckled. And strange, strange alliances. There are always people who understand that when the world changes, the rules change with it. Naomi tugged at her hair, pulling it down over her eyes, and then, angry with herself, pushed it back. So then, to what do I owe this setup bullshit?
Marco's hurt expression could have passed for genuine.
No setup. Philip was in trouble. You were in a position to get our son out of a bad place that had the potential to get a whole lot worse. And paid for it by being pulled on your ship against my will? I can't really thank you for that.
You should, Marco said.
We brought you because you're one of ours. To keep you safe. If we could have explained it all, we would have. But things are delicate. And you don't stop to explain why you're protecting someone when the danger's close. The stakes are the lives of millions of belters and—
Oh, please, Naomi said. You don't think so?
Marco said, a harshness coming into his voice.
You're the one who killed us.
You and your new captain. The minute those gates opened, all the rest of us were dead.
You're still breathing, Naomi said, but her anger sounded like petulance even to herself.
He heard it that way, too.
You didn't grow up down a well. You know how little the Inners cared about us.
The Chesed, Anderson Station, the Cielo Mine Fire.
Belter lives don't mean shit to Inners. Never have.
You know that.
They're not all like that.
Some that pretend they aren't, yeah?
The accents of the belt slipped into his voice, and a rattling anger with them.
But they can still go down the wells. There are 1,000 new worlds and billions of Inners who can just step onto them. No training, no rehab, no drugs.
You know how many belters can tolerate a full G?
Give them everything. All the medical care, the exoskeleton support mechs, nursing homes.
2/3.
2/3 of us could go be cripples on these brave neo-worlds if the Inners pulled together and threw all their money at it.
You think that's going to happen?
Never as before. Last year, 3 pharmaceutical plants stopped even making their low-end bone density cocktails. Didn't open the patents. Didn't apologize to any ships, don't have budget for the high-end stuff. Just stopped. Needed the capacity for colony ships and all the new ganga they're making with the data coming back from the rings.
We're leftovers, Naomi. You and me and Carl and Sin, Tia Margolis, Philip. They're moving on and they're forgetting us because they can. They write the histories. You know what will be? A paragraph about how much it sucks when a race of people go obsolete and how it would have been more humane to put us down. Come, tell me I'm wrong.
It was the same ranting he'd done before, but perfected by years. A new variation of the same arguments he'd made on Ceres. She half expected him to say the Gamara had it coming. This is war, and anyone who helps choke out the enemy is a soldier, whether they know it or not.
Her gut felt like it was made from water.
It was a feeling she remembered from the dark times. Something in the back of her head shifted. The serpent of learned helplessness, long asleep, starting to wake. She pretended it wasn't there, in hopes that if she denied it enough, it wouldn't exist. "What's it got to do with me?" Naomi asked, less forcefully than she intended. Marco smiled. When he spoke, it was back in the voice of the cultured leader. The rough-cut belter thug vanished behind his mask. "You're one of us. Estranged, yes, but one of us all the same. You're the mother of my son. I didn't want you in harm's way." She was supposed to ask what that meant. The path was laid out before her in lights. "What do you mean, harm's way?" she'd say. And he'd tell her. Watch her eyes go wide. See the fear in her. Fuck that. "Didn't want me," she said. "Wanted the Rocinante. Only that didn't work out." "Was it the ship? Or was it Holden? You can tell me. Did you want to show off in front of my new boyfriend? Because that would be kind of sad." She felt her breath coming fast, adrenaline pumping through her. Marco's expression hardened, but before he could speak, the comms chimed and a voice she didn't recognize echoed on the deck. "Hast contact," the woman said. "Que? Little one. Pin us out from Mars. Talking to the Andreas Hofer." "Scout ship?" Marco snapped. The pause stretched for seconds, then, "Looks like just some pinche asshole wrong placing it. Scene one, seen the whole strike force though, yeah? How long before the trigger impact?" 27 minutes. There had been no hesitation. Whoever was on the other end of the comms had known the question was coming. Marco scowled at the control panel. Couldn't have waited a little longer. Would have been prettier without, but fine. Take out the pinnace. Toda? Marco looked over at Naomi, his dark eyes on her. A smile touched his lips. Theatrical asshole that he was. "No. No es toda. Launch the assault on the Martian Prime Minister's ship, too. And tell the hunt group to get ready, so that when the duster runs, we can take him down. Sabes," the woman said. "Orders out." Marco waited, hand out like a challenge. "This is the way," he said. "Make it so they can't forget us. Take chains they fashion to bind us, and use them as whips. We won't go down to darkness. They'll respect us now." "And do what? Shut down the ring?" Naomi said. "Start making your cheap bone drugs again? What do you think shooting a Martian politician's going to do for our people? How does that help anybody?" Marco didn't laugh, but he softened. She had the sense that she'd said something stupid, and it had pleased him. Despite it all, she felt a twinge of embarrassment. "I'm sorry, Naomi. We're going to have to take this up later. But I really am glad you've come back. I know there's a lot of harsh between us, and that we don't see the world the same way, but you'll always be the mother of my son, and I will always love you for that." He lifted a fist to the guards. "Make sure she's secure, then get ready for hard burn. We're heading to the fight." "Sir," one guard said as the other took Naomi by the elbow. Her first instinct was to resist, pull back, but what would the point have been? She pushed off for the lift, her jaw tight, her teeth aching. "One thing," Marco said, and she turned, thinking he was speaking to her. He wasn't. "When you lock her down, make sure it's someplace she can watch a news feed. Today, everything changes. Wouldn't want her to miss it, yeah?"